Message number 38 in the Gospel of John. Focus in the book of John is the Roman trial. While the other Gospels mention the trial before the Jewish Sanhedrin, John doesn't give an account of that trial. John is often called the universal gospel, whereas Matthew is written to the Jews, Mark particularly to the Roman mind, and Luke to the Greek mind. John is often spoken of as the universal gospel writing to the entire world. And maybe John only records the Roman trial because it represents the world's trial against Jesus Christ. Was Pilate in Rome simply ignorant of Jesus? It might seem as though the Jews instigated the crucifixion of Jesus and that Pilate's hand was forced. But the lesson here in John 18 is that Rome also crucified Jesus. For the same reason that the Jews wanted Jesus crucified, Jesus threatened their authority and their power. And that's a spiritual truth we should take from this text. The unsaved man, the world of unsaved men, do not let anyone get in the way of their authority and power. You can have your religion up to a point, as long as man is still on the throne. People like the concept of an all-powerful God taking care of us. But the real problem with God is that he's God. And every man must give up his own authority and his own independence and bow to knee to the authority of God. God is on trial here. And this is about more than just a trial that took place in 30 BC. This is a pattern or a type of man's battle with God. C.S. Lewis did a treatise called God in the Dock. Or rather, God in the defendant's chair being put on trial. The British word for what we would call the defendant's chair is the word dock. And Lewis writes this: ancient man approached God, or even gods, as an accused person approaches his judge. For the modern man, the roles are reversed. Man is the judge, and God is in the dock. Now, man might be quite a kindly judge if God should have a reasonable defense for being a God who permits war, poverty, and disease. Man is ready to listen to God. The trial may even end in God's acquittal. But the important thing is that man is on the bench, and God is in the dock. And think about this. If Pilate would have acquitted Jesus, Pilate would still be guilty, because Pilate made himself the judge when he should have perceived that he should be judged by Jesus. Rather than man judging God, man should be allowing himself to be judged by God. I attended a confirmation hearing in Trenton this week for Judge Fernandez for the New Jersey Supreme Court. Chris Christie is trying to get a few nominees in on the court. And I have to admit, I secretly had a delight in seeing this judge being humiliated and hammered by the U.S. senators. Usually judges think that they're God in their courtroom. You ever been to traffic court? But I was reminded as I was looking at this judge being judged that someday all of the proud and all of the arrogant people in this world, all of the powerful people in this world, will have to stand before the bar of God. And like this judge that I was watching, every man is going to have to give an account of all the decisions he has made. Pilate, Caiaphas, the Sanhedrin had their day to judge God, but God's going to have his day to judge them. So this text is really not about Pilate, it's about you and me. Every man is in Pilate's shoes, deciding what he shall do with Jesus. And not only should you find Jesus innocent, but you should not be standing in judgment upon Jesus, but you should be allowing Jesus to stand in judgment upon you. Now, in 450 BC, the Jews returned back to Israel from their exile in Babylon. They rebuilt the temple, they rebuilt the city. And the nation was under the rule of the Persians, then under the rule of the Greeks. And for a very short period of time, Israel became independent. But in 63 BC, the Roman general Pompey came into Jerusalem and made Israel a part of the Roman Empire. Herod the Great was appointed governor over this province in 40 BC. He was just a local Edomite who supported Rome. Pilate became the Roman governor of Judea in AD 26 until AD 36. Herod Antipas, the son of Herod the Great, became the governor of Galilee in the north. And so Pilate was over Judea, and Herod was over Galilee and over some areas of Syria up here. And you remember that during the trial, which is not mentioned in the Gospel of John, but Pilate sent Jesus over to Herod's palace in Jerusalem because Herod had a place there for when he would come for these Jewish ceremonies and festivals because he wanted to ingratiate himself with the people. And Pilate sent Jesus over to Herod because Pilate said Jesus is from Galilee. He was born, right, in Galilee, and he ministered mostly in Galilee. But then Herod sent Jesus back to Pilate. Now, we don't know much about Pilate except from some Jewish historians, Philo and Josephus, and also the Christian historian Eusebius has a few words to say about him. And historically, Pilate had some trouble respecting Jewish customs. And that stirred insurrection among the Jews, something that Rome did not appreciate. Josephus writes that while Pilate's predecessors had respect for Jewish customs by removing all images when entering Jerusalem, Pilate had his soldiers bring images into the city one night, and when the citizens of Jerusalem discovered it the next morning, they appealed to Pilate to remove the images. After 5 days of deliberation, Pilate had his soldiers surround the demonstrators, threatening them with death, and the Jews were willing to accept death rather than to submit to Pilate. Pilate finally removed the images. Josephus recounts another incident in which Pilate spent money from the temple to build an aqueduct. The Jews protested this, and Pilate had some of his soldiers hiding in the crowd while he was addressing the Jews, and he gave a signal, and his soldiers began to randomly attack and beat and kill the demonstrators. Philo describes an incident where Pilate was chastened by the emperor of Rome for antagonizing the Jews by setting up gold shields in Jerusalem. Pilate also writes that Pilate had a personality that was vindictive, and he had a furious temper, inflexible. Pilate often feared, in regard to that gold shield incident, that the Jews might actually send an embassy back to Rome and expose the governor, not just concerning the shields, but his briberies, his insults, his robberies, executions without trial. Pilate's term as governor of Judea ended after an incident recounted by Josephus. There was a large group of Samaritans who wanted to go up to Mount Gerizim to worship. Pilate sent in a detachment of cavalry, intercepted the group, and killed many. The Samaritans complained to Rome. Pilate was called back to Rome to give an account. And according to Eusebius, Pilate was exiled to Gaul, southern France, and he committed suicide there. We're not sure of that. But the lesson is this, that Pilate had stirred up trouble with the Jews in the past, and this did not make Pilate look good with Rome. Rome wanted Pilate to keep the peace, and so with that in mind, we understand why Pilate gave in to the demands of the Jews. It was better for an innocent man to be put to death than for Pilate to have his job in jeopardy by the Jews complaining to Caesar. Well, let's look at the text. In verse 28, the Praetorium was the official residence of the Roman governor. This was about 6 or 7 o'clock in the morning. Jesus goes into the residence of Pilate alone. And John says, because the Jews didn't want to be defiled. This is the Passover. And the Jews would clean their house of all leaven. The Gentiles would not. And so if a Jew entered into a Gentile home, some leaven might come upon the Jew. And therefore, he would be unclean. Now, most commentators point out that John is trying to make a point here without feeling the need to fully explain it. You see what the point is? It's the irony of it. That the Jews were so concerned about not contacting physical defilement, but they had no concern about unjustly condemning an innocent man. They were straining out the gnat and swallowing the camel. Does that ever happen in this world? Now, why did the Jews want Jesus crucified in the first place? Over in chapter 19, verse 7, the Jews answered, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." What law is that? Deuteronomy 18, 20, "If there's a prophet who speaks a word presumptuously in my name, which I have not commanded him to speak, or speaks in the name of another God, he is to die." Leviticus 24, 16, "Moreover, the one who blasphemes the name of the Lord, he shall surely be put to death." And they would say that Jesus was blaspheming by calling himself the Son of God. But the question is, would the Messiah be blaspheming if he claims to be the Messiah? The real issue is the definition and the expectations they had for the Messiah. Who is God? What will he say when he arrives? Will he approve of me or will he disapprove of me? And if he disapproves of me, does that mean he's not the Messiah? Is that my standard by judging truth, whether I like it or not? It is for a lot of people. And the problem for the Jewish leadership was that the Messiah spoke against them. And in their self-righteousness, they would not accept that the true Messiah would do such a thing. That's why people make idols. They don't want the true God, so they create a false caricature of God. What's your view of God? Is it biblical? Or do you make up a God of your own liking? Now, two of the 70 members of the Sanhedrin agreed with Jesus. Who would they be? And Nicodemus. See that God's people are always in the minority in that example. But the rest were really not concerned with the law of God, were they? They really weren't wrestling with the scripture from Leviticus 24 or Matthew Deuteronomy 18. They were really following their own desires. And in Matthew, we actually read that Pilate understood that they had delivered up Jesus because of envy. Chapter 18, verse 29. Therefore, Pilate went out to them and said, "What accusation do you bring against this man?" They answered and said to him, "If this man were not an evildoer, we would not have delivered him to you." So Pilate said to them, "Take him yourself and judge him according to your law." The Jews said to him, "We are not permitted to put anyone to death." See, the Jewish leaders were not being very specific. They simply said, "He's an evildoer." Wink, wink. "We know what you want. We know, you know what we want you to do to him." See, the Jews were able to keep their own courts, but the Romans reserved the death penalty for themselves. Why? Why did the Romans reserve the death penalty for themselves? Well, true, but if the Jews had the power of the death penalty, who would the Jews put to death? All of the friends of Rome. So, it was for survival that the Romans kept the death penalty. Verse 32. To fulfill the words of Jesus, which he spoke, signifying by what kind of death he was about to die. Which is probably a reference to Jesus constantly saying in the Gospel of John that the Jews would lift him up, or rather hang him up, a reference to being put on the cross. It says this in John 3:14, 8:28. 1232, 1234. And it was very important for the Jewish leadership that Jesus be crucified. Why? Why was it so important for them that he be crucified? Well, let's go down to this text in Deuteronomy 21:22. If a man has committed a sin worthy of death, He is to be put to death, and you hang him on a tree. His corpse shall not hang there all night on the tree, but you shall surely bury him on the same day, for he who is hanged is accursed of God. And we think of a hanging, but the hanging on a tree could be roped to a tree. Now, this is a very strange text, but it generally means that those who are worthy of death are not only cursed of man, but they are actually being cursed of God. It's not just the wrath of man that's being poured out, but it's the wrath of God. So in the minds of the Jews, to have Jesus die on the cross would prove that he was not the Blessed One, but that he was a blasphemer, an imposter, cursed of God. Because everybody knows that the Messiah would be blessed of God, and he would never hang on a tree. They would have rather had on a sign on the top of the cross that says, "Jesus, cursed of God, the accursed one, Jesus, anathema." But instead, what did Pilate put on the sign? "Jesus, the King of the Jews." You know, this is kind of deep, but this is the logic that evil uses to justify evil. If I can persecute the good is not the good. If it was the good, I would not be able to persecute it. But since I can get away with persecuting it, I must have the approval of God. The fact that I can persecute it gives me some assurance that I'm not wrong. It's kind of twisted thinking, but that's the logic by which Christians have been persecuted by the communists and the Nazis and by Mao Zedong. So Pilate enters the praetorium and summons Jesus and says to him, "Are you the King of the Jews?" Jesus answered, "Are you saying this on your own initiative, or did others tell you about me?" Pilate answered, "I'm not a Jew, am I? Your own nation, your chief priests, delivered you to me. What have you done?" Now, this is Pilate's first question in all four Gospels, and the subject is the kingship or the authority of Christ, and that's the main issue here, right? Now, it seems as if Jesus is asking Pilate a question. He's actually not asking him a question. He's actually teaching Pilate by making Pilate think. And the question is, are you saying this on your own initiative? Meaning, have I challenged Rome? Is this something that you have come up with? Have I threatened Rome? Pilate knew that Jesus did not. Or did others tell you about me? Meaning, this is a Jewish complaint, isn't it? And Pilate admits that this is a complaint from your own nation. So Pilate asks, what have you really done to arouse the hostility of the Jews? And on Pilate's mind, the only reason for hostility would be treason. So Jesus answers the question that Pilate is really hinting to about his kingdom and his authority. My kingdom is not of this world. Now, this text can be easily misapplied and misunderstood. There is the two kingdom position in explaining Christian involvement in the public sphere. There are people who say that since we are not of this world, that we are of a different kingdom, we have nothing to do or nothing to say to the kingdom of this world. We just let them do their own thing, and then we do our own thing. You see how you can get that from this text, right? Jesus is saying, listen, it's your kingdom. My kingdom's not of this world. Otherwise, we would be fighting. People then take this as a reason to not be involved in the public sphere. Well, yes, there are two kingdoms. It's even mentioned in Daniel, chapter 2, verse 44, that the God of heaven will set up a kingdom. But that does not imply we have nothing to say to the kingdom of this world, because as you look at other texts of Scripture, all human kings must submit to the authority of Christ's kingdom. Psalm chapter 2. O kings, show discernment. Take warning. Do homage to the Son, that he does not become angry with you. Worship the Lord. And also, in Revelation chapter 1, verse 5, Jesus Christ is the ruler of the kings of this earth. And our role as Christians is to bear witness to this world of the standards of the true king. The only prohibition we have is to what? Not take up arms. At this time, the kingdom of Christ does not exert its authority over this world through physical warfare. But we are still here to bear witness to the standards and the truth of the authority of Jesus Christ. There's a lot here in this text. Okay. Verse 37. Therefore, Pilate says to him, "So you're a king." Jesus answered, "You are saying correctly that I'm a king. For this I have been born, and for this I have come into the world, to testify to the truth. Everyone who is of the truth hears my voice." A few interesting points in this verse. First, that Jesus says that he was born and came into this world. In this, Christ is claiming pre-existence. This is language that people don't normally use of themselves. It's kind of like if I said to you, "Well, I came to this planet." Or, "I arrived at this planet." You say, "Well, that's kind of strange language." Well, that's exactly what Jesus is saying here. Pilate probably didn't notice this unusual language until chapter 19, verse 8, when he heard that Jesus claimed to be the Son of God. Then he became afraid. And also, the text says that Jesus came to bear witness to the truth. That is a good pattern for all of us. Our job here on earth is to bear witness to the truth. I know one fellow who, every time I see him, he quotes this text. He says, "I am here to bear witness to the truth." In fact, you can contrast that statement with what it says in verse 36. The contrast is being made. We are not fighting. We are not taking up arms to fight the kingdoms of this world. We're here to bear witness to the truth to the kingdoms of this world. And rather than people receiving the message by force, Jesus is saying that people must come willingly. That is, those people who are of the truth will hear my voice. But of course, then Pilate says, what is truth? Kind of a philosophical, snarky reply. A way to dismiss the subject. But in saying this, what do we immediately find out about Pilate? He is not one of the people of the truth. What is truth? He denies it, and he doesn't hear Jesus' voice. Verse 38, and when he had said this, he went out again to the Jews and said to them, I find no guilt in him. But you have a custom that I release someone for you at the Passover. Do you wish then I release for you the king of the Jews? So they cried out again, not this man, but Barabbas. Pilate's going to make three appeals for Jesus' release. Pilate has learned everything he wants to know. Jesus is not a revolutionary. He's not a threat to Rome. And in this first appeal, Pilate's going to try to dissuade their anger, their mob lynching, by first stating that this man is innocent. Second, by calling Jesus the King of the Jews. Do you wish then that I release for you the King of the Jews? Wouldn't it look bad for Rome to crucify someone who claims to be the King of the Jews? The Jews would usually support anyone who claims some authority over Rome. They might not like Jesus, but if he's making a statement against Roman authority, Jesus can't be all that bad. The enemy of my enemy is my friend. And then Pilate appeals to this tradition of releasing a prisoner at the Passover to show the people how magnanimous Rome was. So you see the psychological techniques that Pilate is using to get Jesus released, but they turn Pilate down, which must have surprised Pilate, that they preferred Barabbas to Jesus. Now, John says that Barabbas was a robber. And that's a general term. Mark explains a little bit more. He had been imprisoned with the insurrectionists who had committed murder in an insurrection. So Barabbas was a Jewish freedom fighter, a terrorist against Rome, part of a local resistance movement. And there were probably some people in the crowd that day that wanted Barabbas released. But here's the irony. They complained that Jesus ought to be crucified because why? They only have one king, and that's Caesar. They don't want any other king. They want to be loyal to Caesar. But who do they ask for a release? From an insurrectionist, a freedom fighter, somebody who is actually trying to liberate Israel. A lot could be said about people's desire for a Barabbas over Jesus. People want a political deliverer before a spiritual deliverer. Right? They were more concerned about deliverance from Rome rather than their own sin. This is very typical. People want deliverance not from their sin, but from their circumstances. So, therefore, they choose a wrong Messiah. The second attempt. Pilate then took Jesus and scourged him. Soldiers twisted together a crown of thorns and put it on his head and put a purple robe on him. And they began to come up to him and say, "Hail, King of the Jews." They give him slaps in the face. Pilate came out again and said, "Behold, I am bringing him out to you, that you may know that I find no guilt in him." Jesus then came out wearing a crown of thorns and a purple robe. Pilate said to them, "Behold the man." So when the chief priests and the officers saw him, they cried out, saying, "Crucify, crucify." Pilate said to them, "Take him yourself and crucify him, for I find no guilt in him." The Jews answered, "We have a law, and by that law he ought to die, because he made himself out to be the Son of God." Therefore, when Pilate heard this statement, he was even more afraid. Now, some have mistaken from the other Gospels this teaching here, as if Jesus was scourged after the final verdict, just before he went to the cross. But actually, the other Gospels are not real clear on this. John clears it up, and that the flogging was actually given to help secure Jesus' release. And the Roman floggings, they were brutal. Most people didn't even live through them. It would take years for the wounds to heal. People would often want death rather than the flogging. But that the people still wanted Jesus crucified after seeing Jesus totally mutilated probably even surprised Pilate. But it surprises us too, doesn't it? It shows us how deep anger goes. It shows how people react when they are convicted by their sin. And it shows the evilness of self-righteousness. We also see the evil of the Roman soldiers. They're filled with racism and hatred toward the Jews, and they take it out on Jesus. They show no compassion. In Romans chapter 3, concerning the sin of mankind, their feet are swift to shed blood. And they mock him and say, "Hail to the King of the Jews." And the irony is that Jesus is King of Kings and Lord of Lords. And be careful who you mock. Because someday these soldiers will actually bow before Jesus again, but it will be their judgment. The third attempt. And he entered into the praetorium again and said to Jesus, "Where are you from?" But Jesus gave him no answer. So Pilate answered him, "You do not speak to me? Do you not know that I have authority to release you and I have authority to crucify you?" Jesus answered, "You would have no authority over me unless it had been given to you from above. For this reason, he who delivered me to you has the greater sin." Pilate was afraid when he heard that Jesus was the Son of God, and I'm sure what contributed to this was the fact that he heard that Jesus was a miracle worker. We also read in Matthew chapter 27, verse 19, that somebody handed Pilate a note during the trial. And what did that note say? It was a note from his wife, and it wasn't pick up bread and milk on the way home. It was a note that said, "Have nothing to do with that righteous man, for last night I suffered greatly in a dream because of him." That's Matthew 27, 19. Now, Jesus also here corrects Pilate because Pilate thinks that he has authority over Jesus. And he really doesn't. There's a whole message in this one verse. In fact, it's a whole God and country. We need to remind people in authority that they rule as subordinates to God. Even their mistakes are permitted by God to punish them and to punish the people. Men have no power over us unless God gives them permission. Remember the book of Job? Satan couldn't even touch Job. And that's really a comfort, that nobody can touch us unless God gives permission. Which means Romans 8:28 is true. All things are going to work together for good. All things are ordained by God. Well, now we could say that Pilate made maybe a third or fourth attempt. As a result of this, Pilate made efforts to release him. But the Jews cried out, "If you release this man, you are no friend of Caesar. Everyone who makes himself out to be a king opposes Caesar." Therefore, when Pilate heard these words, he brought Jesus out and sat down on the judgment seat at the palace called the pavement, but in Hebrew, Gabbatha, and he hands him over to be crucified. What caused Pilate to finally give into their wishes? Mark chapter 15 says Pilate wished to satisfy the crowd. Matthew 27, when he saw that a riot was starting to break out. John 19, when Pilate heard the words that he, Pilate, was opposing Caesar. Proverbs 29:25, the fear of man brings a snare. And the lesson here is that our rejection of God is very subtle. It's not that man in his rejection of God rejects all of God. He just rejects part. For a while, Pilate would try to release Jesus, and Pilate would try to do the right thing, but only up to a certain point. Man is not lost because he totally rejects God and truth and justice. He is lost because he will only accept God up to a certain point. Only up until the point that it doesn't cost him his career or his livelihood or ultimately his life. He will give God 99%, but he will hold back on the 1%. But Jesus is not Lord at all unless he is Lord of all. So it is also with us, even in lesser things. A husband or a wife might say, well, you know, I'll be a good husband or a good wife only up until a point. Or I will, obey my parents only in those things I was going to do anyway, only in those things that are convenient. I'm a Christian only up until a point. And Jesus isn't really Lord. Compare Pilate's response to how Jesus described the requirements of being a disciple or even being a Christian. If anyone wishes to come after me, he must deny himself, take up his cross daily, and follow me. For whoever wishes to save his life will lose it. But whoever loses his life for my sake, he is the one who saves it. To come to Christ, you must put Christ before your very life. And that's a test of true lordship. That's the essence of true salvation. You know, what's really frightening is we look at Pilate. I even sometimes look at Pilate and say, I feel sorry for him. He really did try. We might even look at him and say, you know, he's an innocent victim of his circumstances. But he wasn't. He wasn't willing to sacrifice his all for God and for justice and for truth. And that's why he's lost. And he is an example of every man. God's salvation is for everyone. But the demand is more than what most people are willing to give, that Jesus Christ is to be Lord. Can you say this morning that you will lay down your life for God, your career, your ambitions, your pride, your wealth? Is he truly the Lord of your life?